And thinking about these particular houses in which Jesus was present, I think it's important to remember that he no more had to go to these houses than he had to go to any of the others. Even though we've pointed out that while Jesus had been an invited guest in the others, or while he may have visited the others in order to be a blessing, and in these cases he is taken, bound as a prisoner to each one of these houses, he's going just as voluntarily, in one sense of the word. When he left the Garden of Gethsemane, remember that he pointed out to Peter, "Don't you think I could have called 12 legions of angels?" So he's going, he's submitting himself or subjecting himself to this, and I suggest that this is one of the ways or one of the cases in which Jesus begins to take our sins upon himself. I think we're together here that starts before the cross. And what we found out is that he gets taken first to the house of Annas and then to the house of Caiaphas. And we pointed out that, anybody remember what the connection between these two guys was? All right, this is the father-in-law who had been high priest and still obviously wielded a lot of the influence. And this is the son-in-law who is presently the high priest. He was for 18 years during this period of time. And from here, he goes to Pilate, the governor's house. From there to Herod, this is Herod Antipas, who's in power at the time, supposedly in power. And then he goes back to Pilate. So there are four houses, but there are five interviews that take place here during this period of time. And we've pointed out that if you let this be, say, the temple precinct, and there would be the walls, and then the temple would be here facing east. And if you let this be the Valley of Hinnom, and this over here, the Mount of Olives, and we'll say that Gethsemane maybe takes place over here, is located over here. Then you have the fortress of Antonia right here, and then the thought is that the high priest's palace would have been here, that possibly the palace of Herod Antipas is here, and then over here on the western wall of the old city, there would be the palace of Herod the Great, which I think most people think is used at this point by Pilate when he's in town. Pilate's headquarters during this period of history were actually in Caesarea. That's where he ruled as governor. He came to Jerusalem because it was the time of the Passover feast and there were huge crowds in town. And so ostensibly to keep order, he's in town during this period of time. And that kind of sets the stage for what our discussion will be today. Appreciate your being here. If you're a guest, we welcome you. If you've been out of town, John, we're glad to have you back. You and Briley no doubt got the country straightened out. Huh? Okay. We appreciate the safe trip for you. Look out there today. Does it feel like time for baseball for you? Man, I saw this morning on the news 5 inches of snow or so in St. Louis yesterday. It's going to be tough on Albert, I'm afraid, on Thursday evening. We'll see. Randy, we congratulate his family first on the little one, and we are glad Erica's doing better, Randy. Everybody keep her in your prayers. Who else do we have today that needs to be mentioned? Any other prayer requests? Norma, yes.
Several family members. Some of them have been about some of them have just remember my family.
If you were here Wednesday night, you know part of what Norma's talking about, and we keep her family in prayers. Keep Elaine in your prayers. Brenda said they've heard from her, and so we're glad for that. Anyone else that you guys know need to mention today? All right, it's good to have Jerry and Pat back from the great Southwest here back with us. We hope the springtime proves to be a blessing to everybody. Travis, I wonder if you'll mind to lead our prayer this morning as we get started.
Our Father in heaven, we thank you so much for the day that we have to worship you, to come together as our church family and as your heirs. We ask that you bless our studies today as we look into your word and try to understand what visiting houses really means, and especially as the Christ was visiting these houses. We ask that you open our hearts and minds to understand what it means to really be a Christian and follower of Christ. We thank you so much for the news for Randy and Orville's families. We ask that you continue to bless them, and we ask that you just be with their daughter and she heals. We ask that you bless Norma's family as well, and be with them, comfort them. Be with us as we strive to minister to those and just provide a comforting word or a helping hand. Help us to have in our hearts the worker attitude that seeks out things to accomplish on this world as we're here. We ask that you give us the right hearts and mindsets to do so. Be with Bill as he teaches us today. In your son's name. Amen.
Thank you, Travis. Appreciate the mention in the prayer about the houses that the Lord mentions here. While we've been looking at these houses especially, what kind of human problems, or I can use the word sins even, do you notice present that the Lord is in the presence of in these houses so far?
Pride,
very much so. What else?
I don't have to say it exactly, but the fear of losing your position.
All right, that's a symptom of pride, isn't it? The guarding of the position, maybe the feeling of superiority that goes with that. Anything else?
Illness.
All right, there is illness in these particular houses. I'm talking about these here. We've seen that problem in a bunch of the others. Remember, lying, hate, scheming, plotting, all those kind of things are here.
Like judging.
All right, very much so. The feeling that they have a right to destroy someone else, that's part of it here. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. In the suffering that he's doing here and is about to complete, does he do that any less for these houses than the other ones we've mentioned? No, see, that is the question. They may respond not like they should, but these are the human problems that he's dealing with. On the paper that you got there, look at section number 5. And just for a moment, number 8, right at the end of that, we've worked our way down to here last week. And I just want to point out that in these three appearances, or these two appearances here, are the religious parts of this whole exercise of getting rid of Jesus. Now, doesn't that sound strange when I say it that way? This is the religious part of this. What I mean by that is, at least the religious authorities are in charge of these, and when they've come to the conclusion that they reach here, what is it that Caiaphas, and we use the word convicts Jesus of very loosely, but what is it that Caiaphas uses as a conclusion that they don't need to go any farther now? They have all they need against him. What?
Blasphemy.
All right, blasphemy. And what is supposed to have been... First, what is blasphemy?
Speaking against God.
All right, speaking against God, attributing evil to God.
putting oneself in the place of God, that would be, I suppose, a part of the definition of this at least. But in verse 64, verse 62 of Mark 14, if you take a look at it, you notice that that is the what they have against Jesus. Now, why do they not take him out and stone him right then? The Romans won't let them. They don't have the power of capital punishment. They're allowed. The Romans hire out to the Sadducee and priestly family the right to exercise religious rule over the Jews at the time, but not the right to deal with the capital offenses. And so that will be an issue that you're going to notice happens here. Now, what begins to be done to Jesus in verses 64 and 65? Having reached the conclusion that blasphemy is his guilt, they all condemn him. All right, there is the condemning part of this attitude exercise. And then how was he treated from that point until the morning? Let's actually read these two passages. Verses 65, really, in Mark 14, verse 65 is what I'm interested in. And then Luke 22, verses 63 through 65. Notice these two statements. Brendan, the first one, please.
Mark 14:65.
Yes.
And some began to spit at him, blindfold him, to beat him with their fist, and say to him, "Prophesy." And the officers received him with slaps in the face.
All right. What attitude is represented in those actions in that case?
Cowardice.
All right. Why do you say cowardice, Travis?
Well, they covered his face.
All right. All right. Any other descriptions that you can see there? What?
Hatred,
all right. They despise him, maybe. What else?
Ridicule,
that's what Brian was going to say as well. Ridicule, which one hurts worse? It's hard to separate them out. I wonder if ridicule is not meant to say, you're about as low and useless as you can get. All right, look at the other one now, Luke 22, 63-65. John, you have your glasses. This first John here, you have your glasses today. Why don't you read for us?
Now the men who were holding Jesus in custody were mocking him as they beat him. They also blindfolded him and kept asking him, "Prophesy. Well, who is it that struck you?" And they said many other things against him, blaspheming him.
All right. Now notice they've convicted him of blasphemy. What are they doing to him?
Blasphemy.
All right. Why do you think they bring up the point of prophesying? You know, blindfold him, hit him in the face, ask him who did it. What's that? That seems sort of seventh grade-ish, doesn't it? What's that meant to indicate?
You don't have the power that you say you do.
All right, they're making fun of the people's view that this fellow is a prophet of some sort or another. So very much discounting his personhood and all of that. Now, because they don't have the authority to exercise the punishment they believe is deserved themselves, they have to take him from here to the Roman governor of the province of Judea, which is Pilate. Pontius Pilate, and we've made the point that last week about the time frame for this. So without trying to read the whole, all of the sections that are involved here, I want to read the John passage, John 18, verses 28 to 38. Brian, if you don't mind, look that up for us and read it. And we will refer to a couple of the others. I think the Luke passage, Russell, if you don't mind, get it. Luke 23, 1 through 5. By the way, that should say Luke 23, 1 through 5. Does it say that on your... No, that's number 8 where the computer made the mistake. Okay. Let's read those two passages at this point. Okay, Brian?
John 18, 28,
yes.
38.
Yes.
Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you." Then Pilate said to them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." Therefore the Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die." Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered him, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him at all."
Okay. I'd like to know what tone of voice he said, "What is truth," then, when I read that. In order to show the connection between this whole conversation and the focus on the "Are you the king of the Jews" question, look at the light that Luke sheds on this episode. Russ?
"Then the whole assembly rose and led him to Pilate, and they began to accuse him, saying, 'We have found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Messiah, the king.' So Pilate asked Jesus, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' 'You have said so,' Jesus replied. Then Pilate announced to the chief priests and the crowd, 'I find no basis for a charge against this man.' But they insisted, 'He stirs up the people all over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee and has come to all the way here.'"
All right, now, the first of these questions that we've already mentioned about Pilate's role and why they hand him over to him. So let's kind of follow it down through the discussion here. First, why did part of this conversation take place outside? I think I counted up in John's record here down through chapter 19 how much of the time Pilate goes inside to talk to Jesus, outside. He's inside where the governor's seat is, and most people think it was here. Jesus inside, but Pilate goes outside to talk to Jews, inside to talk to him, and I counted at least six times, or maybe more than that, even implied in this. Why does John say that part of the conversation took place outside?
They went to the praetorium and said they would be defiled,
Does that strike you as odd? They're doing this early in the morning. They've already decided they're going to get rid of this guy, and they've hired liars and all that to do it, but they won't go inside because that would defile them to eat the. What's inside of them won't defile them, but what they go inside of might defile them. There's the problem that you have here. And we point out the Jews believed, apparently, that they could enter the courtyard or whatever of a Gentile's house as long as that area didn't have a roof over it. If it had a roof over it, then they couldn't enter that, or they would be defiled and would not be able to participate in the feast. And so Pilate has some sort of arrangement with them, has submitted himself to their whims in questioning Jesus inside and going outside. Now, if you'll notice, Jesus talks to Pilate, at least in the beginning of this, inside, but he never says anything outside in the presence of the Jews. The reason is they've already shown their attitude toward him. You see, that's already already been settled. Now, what was the nature of their accusations against Jesus before Pilate? This man, we have found this man guilty of blasphemy, right? I mean, that's what they said up here, but what's the nature of their accusations before Pilate?
Insurrection. Not paying Caesar.
All right.
It's the wrong guy.
So basically, they accuse him of being a Republican. I'm kidding. I'm only kidding. All right. Basically, two things. He tells people not to pay their taxes. Was that true? No. What had Jesus just done a few days before with Peter? Remember the coins in the fish's mouth? You know, remember that? What was the other thing that they accused him of in relation to Caesar? Stirring up the crowd, stirring up insurrection. The worst two things you could say to a Roman ruler was, this man's he's trying to cut off the money flow, and he's trying to stir up trouble. So why did they just happen to bring this up before Pilate?
They have
calculated where and when the accusations need to be made, and you can see that, I think, if you think of it now.
I wonder how much of this information is getting back to the original crowd that was at Caiaphas' house. Yeah. I mean, was the whole crowd there, or?
Well, Mark says, we didn't read it, but Mark 15, verse 1 and following, says the council got together early in the morning and took counsel against Jesus to deliver him over to be killed. I'm not quoting it, but that's the sense of it. So they have agreed somehow or another. Now, which one of these accusations seems to have gotten Pilate's attention most when you read this?
Stirring up trouble, he's the king.
All right. The thing Pilate goes in and questions him about is whether he's a king. Now, the matter seems to be with that if Jesus is pictured, if Pilate is pictured as being willing to condone an opposition candidate to Caesar, then that's when he would be in most danger. So he is protecting himself more than anything else. How did Jesus conduct himself before Pilate? All right, very, very much calmly. Was he intimidated by Pilate? How did he answer Pilate's question about whether he was the king of the Jews?
You say so.
All right, he gets to that later, but what does he say?
How'd you come up with that? Is that something you thought of?
All right, that's first. Is that something you really want to know? Or is this a cooked up accusation? Is this your question? That's first in verse 34. Then next in verse 36, when Pilate presses him, what have you done to cause your people to deliver you over? Are you the king of the Jews? What does he say?
It is as you say.
All right, it is as you say, but he says, John 18:36, my kingdom is not of this world. What does he mean by that? Does he deny that he's a king?
No.
But when he says, my kingdom's not of this world, what does he mean?
It's no threat to. It's not going to be a threat to Caesar or any of that.
All right, I'm not a king like Caesar, in other words. I'm not that kind of king. He didn't mean he was less important, but he meant that his kingdom was greater than that. And then he went ahead to tell Pilate that his mission was to bear witness of the truth, and that's when Pilate wants to know what is truth, you know. Now, the going back and forth indicates first an unwillingness by Pilate to make a decision about this. Second, changing accusations on the part of the of the people, the crowd out in the front. And third, that Jesus is handling all of this in such a noble way that he can't be easily condemned about it. Now, in the process of this, in Luke's account, when mention is made that he's been stirring up the people in Galilee, Pilate hears Galilee, and what does he think?
He's not in my jurisdiction.
All right, there is a way for me to hand him off. Now, what you need to know is that the Herod who is mentioned here is tetrarch, I think, of Galilee and Perea, meaning tetrarch is Luke's word. It means he's been sort of the token ruler of a fourth part of the land. Pilate still has the responsibility for the province. He is handing off his responsibility to somebody who really can't settle the issue. Now, Herod Antipas, what other famous thing has Herod Antipas, I'll get to the, what other famous thing is, what other thing is he famous for? Alright, he's the one who submitted to allowing John to be killed. That man. Alright, what were you going to say, Brian?
He almost kind of hands it off a little bit in their question, or in his question, because they say, well, he's trying to be a king. Oh, you're going to be a king of the Jews? I can live with that.
Yeah,
you can have your own little king.
All right.
And in that, well, if you're saying you're king of the Jews, well, you're still, that's not such a problem. Now, if you're saying you're going to be king, that's different.
If you're going to say that you're the governor of Judea, we have a problem. But king of the Jews, that's a good point. Very good point. Now, a couple of things about Herod Antipas that might be of interest to us about his character. You remember what fault John the Baptist found with this Herod? He had his brother's wife. Now, there's an interesting background to this. She was actually also his own niece. And she had been married to his half-brother, Philip. So, I don't want to hear y'all making fun of our families from Arkansas. we, that's not how we live down there. This is a man of low character. And Pilate Pilate and this man have not been on good terms. And you'll see that, but Pilate is willing to look for a way out of this, and he sees that opportunity now. So look at Luke 23, verses 6 through 12. Let's think about it for a second. Luke is the only one of these writers who mentions this episode. And it apparently is the case because it involves he's more involved in the political aspects of this. Look at this. John, do you mind to read for us? 2 John. Okay.
Where was that in?
Luke 23, verses 6 through 12.
When Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him, because he had heard about him, and he was hoping to see some sign done by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him, and Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other.
All right. Now, I don't want to spend too much time with this. We've already talked about why Pilate sent Jesus to Herod. What was the nature of Herod's interest in Jesus? Justice?
Yeah.
All right. How would you describe that interest then? If it's just want to see him do some sign or something, what's the level of that?
Curiosity.
Just curiosity, entertainment, sport, pretty much that kind of thing. And just a lesson for us here. Please realize that when people maybe look at your faith a little bit and then sort of toss it aside or don't take it seriously or don't accept it, that doesn't mean that it's because they were too smart for it or that they examined it carefully and found it wanting or lacking. There are always other things at work in people's minds and lives. And you certainly see that with our friend Herod here. How does Jesus respond to Herod?
As far
as I can tell, not a word. Why did he deal, you think he dealt with him this way?
His attitude.
Doesn't give him any sense.
All right, if it's no use, it's no use wasting words here or submitting to that kind of an examination. So
Herod wasn't the rightful king of the Jews anyway, was he?
Not in any religious sense at all. Not in any way that any authority that God had given him. Only by bribery with the Roman authorities at the time. Now, we get at this point. What do the chief priests and scribes do during this period of time? You got to bear in mind why they're here. Jesus started out late the night before over here at the Garden of Gethsemane or wherever the exact location was. Then he's been brought to the high priest's house here, if we're right in the location. Then from here to Herod, here to Pilate, and then here to Herod Antipas. And so the chief priests and the scribes have made the journey or have followed along. What do they do during this period of time? What does Luke say they did?
They were accusing him.
And accusing him how?
Vehemently.
All right. Strongly, persistently, vehemently. I picture them hollering or shouting out these kinds of accusations. So that may tell you that they were outside or that this happens in front of Herod's palace maybe. How do Herod's soldiers now treat Jesus?
They were mocking him.
All right. And how is their mocking Jesus different from the mockery he received at the before the high priest or at the high priest's house?
Oh, gorgeous clothes on him.
All right. Over there, they blindfolded him and hit him and spit in his face and so forth and asked who did it. Showed complete contempt. Here at Herod's palace, they put splendid clothing on him. What are they trying to indicate by that?
He was a king.
All right.
It was more the Jews.
The mockery over here seemed to indicate more ill will or despite. Here it's more good natured, making fun of him, and maybe making fun of his people as well, even though Herod is purports to be one of them. If I understand it properly, Herod's background was what would have been called Idumean. But anyway, he has the connection with them. And Herod sends him back saying what? Verse 15. All right, look, this man, nothing deserving of death has been done by this man. And Pilate says that at verse 15, if you notice that way. The only thing that's happened now with this episode is an alliance has been formed between Pilate and Herod that didn't exist before. So apparently alliances can be made by having a common enemy about as much as they can be made by having something you agree on. And that's a strange thing about human nature. All right, now we're back at the palace of, at the house of Pilate, or at the headquarters of Pilate. I pointed out that Luke's account says in verses 13 through 15 that Pilate says that neither he nor Herod have found Jesus guilty of any of their charges against him. For our purposes now, let's read the account here in John 18, verses 38 and following. And on your paper, by the way, I had a misprint. The Luke passage should say Luke 23 instead of 18. And then the passage in Matthew, you could go on through verse 31 instead of stopping at verse 23 to get the whole picture. Let's read the John account. John 18, verse 38 through chapter 19, verse 16. Okay. We have somebody who really wants to read, and Jan, would you mind to read a little bit of that for us?
Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I should release someone for you at the Passover. Do you wish then that I release for you the king of the Jews?" Therefore they cried out again, saying, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. And they began to come up to him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and give him blows to the face. And Pilate came out again and said to them, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus therefore came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold this man." When therefore the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify, crucify." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." When Pilate therefore heard this statement, he was the more afraid, and he entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate therefore said to him, "You do not speak to me. Do you not know that I have the authority to release you, and I have the authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no authority over me unless it had been given to you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me up to you has the greater sin." As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard these words, he brought Jesus out, sat down, judgment seat at a place called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover, and it was about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." They therefore cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So then he delivered them to him, delivered him to them to be crucified.
All right, thanks, Dan. All right, now just some quick questions about this, and our class will be finished today. What is the, let's see if you get the same impression here that I got reading this. What's the one point that is most frequently made during this part of the story?
There's
no guilt. All right, I find no guilt in him, or there is no guilt is found. And I tried to count, I'm not sure I got them all, but I found it four times, I think, here in this record, three or four times in this record. And you can see that that's the thing that gets emphasized throughout this. Why does that not settle the story? Why doesn't that end the discussion? All right, because that was never what was at stake, was it? That's never what was. They were not. This was not about trying to find whether he was guilty or not. If it had been, there wouldn't have been the changing accusations and all of the different efforts that there were. What efforts did Pilate make to release Jesus? And you can include here some of the efforts that are not recorded by John. Just from your own memory, what are the efforts that Pilate made to release Jesus?
Customary release of the prisoner.
All right, the choice, this man or this this bad man Barabbas, that would be one. What other efforts does he make?
Wash his hands in front of him.
All right, Matthew's account of the washing of the hands. I'm innocent of the blood of this righteous man. Of course, he wasn't, but that's what he tried to do. What else?
Trying to
raise
him.
Pardon?
Yeah,
has he been scourged? All right, I'll scourge him. Yeah. Now, think of this. How can you say, I find no guilt in this man, I find no guilt in this man, I find no guilt in this man, I'll whip him, which was a terrible thing, and let him go?
Hoping that would pacify
them. Hoping that would settle them. Am I leaving one out? Can you think of any other? Alright. They wanted him to be
you take him.
You take. He tried to say, and that's ultimately what he did. You take him and crucify him yourself in John 19. The problem was even he knew they couldn't do that, so he finally submits to their will. What efforts did the chief priests and elders and scribes, or what did they do during this part of the story?
Seems like there was a lot of yelling and going on.
All right. They, and John doesn't dwell on this as much as you'll find in Mark and Matthew, but they are the ones who stir up the crowd. They are accusing Jesus of stirring up the people, but they stir up the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to shout out, crucify him, crucify him, and so forth. So they play an active role during this. They're not just waiting to see what will happen. They're active players in it. What made Pilate grow afraid as these events unfolded?
They said he claimed to be God's son.
All right, whenever they said that this is God's son, even Pilate started wondering about that. And there's one part of the detail that Matthew mentions that John doesn't hear. Do you remember? It involves Pilate's wife. You remember? She had a dream about this righteous man and told Pilate, don't have anything to do with him. And Pilate's beginning to... he's beginning to have thoughts about this now, and he's afraid about... What's the only thing we know that Jesus said during this part of the day? And it's John 19, verse 11.
You wouldn't have any of your power if it wasn't
for. All right, so how is Jesus able to maintain his dignity through this like he does?
He had the power to stop it if he chose to.
All right, he knows his Father is still in control. He knows that the Father is still the one who has the authority. None of that's being taken away from him here. Why did Pilate finally hand Jesus over to their will? Huh?
I think he's afraid of the crowd.
The voices of the people prevailed, I think, is Mark's way of saying it. But when they said, if you do this, you are no friend of Caesar. Some of you know from studying Mr. Pilate that he already had some black marks on his record and was on shaky ground. But that seems to be the thing that tipped the dominoes over when they said that, Brian.
Well, it's easier to answer for accidentally crucifying someone than an uprising of the people. And so when you're called on the carpet, well, I avoided an uprising by crucifying this man, but if the people are uprising,
all right,
then you've got a big statement.
That's a great point. It's an important part of this story. How is that similar to Caiaphas thinking after Lazarus had been raised in John chapter 11? All right, it's better for one man to die for the nation than for us to lose, the Romans to come and cause us to lose our place. So the very similar type of outlook in both cases. What title did Pilate assign to Jesus as he handed him over to him?
King.
What?
Your king.
Behold, your king. What did he mean by that?
He
Was there some disgust toward them expressed by Pilate there? Now, I ask, what did the member, what sign did he hand, did he nail above Jesus on the cross? Did the bell ring and you guys are ready to nail a sign over me? I just mentioned this before we let you go. I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was that late. Remember, this is Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. And I point out what kind of justice was this really? Well, that's what they accused him of. But that's not what they wanted Pilate to write for his crime on his cross. So there was some level of justice, at least in that kind of thing. Well, that's the end of time. Thank you guys for being with us today. Everybody have a good week.